on the boat, and my assertion that rape. And so somebody was asking, why did I think that was rape? And let's have that conversation. Do you or do you not think that that scene was rape?
I thought it was consensual.
Okay.
I don't remember why.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, but at least you took a position, and other people can relate to that.
No, I thought the thing...
Pardon me? Speak up.
Dentata?
That was
pretty
crazy. Yeah. But that was this. But was that not the second time they were having intercourse?
No. That was the first.
It was the first.
Only happened once.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how would the Dentata have worked?
True.
Word on this resistance.
I felt like she kind of knew what was happening the whole time and didn't try to stop it.
Okay.
Yeah, but what can she do? I mean,
let him finish.
I mean, like at that point, after they had already, after they had met, like outside of the cafeteria, or like they walked out of the cafeteria, I don't see that there's anything she could have done to get away from it because she knew how dangerous he was.
And what about her environment?
And she was in an environment where could she go?
And was he acting as her protector at that moment?
Yeah.
Significant. And you had something?
Well, he's very powerful. He's manipulative. Whether or not you can openly see that she's trying to resist, maybe it's just kind of that persuasion. And would she be, if she wasn't in that kind of hostile environment or in that situation, would things have gone differently if she was able to act with discretion?
Okay. I like those points. I very much agree with them. If we were bystanders in this, if we just... We're one of the people on the raft who saw like this giant homicidal maniac leading this little girl into the
bedroom.
Yeah, bedroom. Then I can totally see us like viewing it as rape. But we actually get to see what she's thinking during the entire time, and she doesn't seem to be minding it that much.
Good literary critic.
Do you also
other comments?
Page.
We don't have the same pages. But go ahead if you want to draw people's attention to it.
Sorry.
Uh-huh. She seemed to kind of not mind it because earlier when they were kind of walking around, she was kind of like proud to be with them almost. She was like, none of these people know that I'm walking around with like the most dangerous man. And she didn't really seem to care. She kind of thought it was like sexy or something.
It probably was sexy or something. Smelly, homicidal, 300-pound maniac.
Yeah, I don't see
how it can be. It's like it's the author is the one that's making it seem kind of sexy.
Get
it? So
her age.
Yeah, that's an age. Is that a relevant datum?
Yeah.
What is her age?
15.
So technically, of course, this is a future world. Technically, it doesn't count. But it is rape. You cannot give consent, no matter what. You could say yes, 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 and it doesn't count. It's rape if you're under 16.
But if that is established by the government and in the future,
right? That's right. That says that. But I'm trying to assess it. And, both of these things are relevant. Both what we know about that law, which is there for a reason, but also the fact that in a future world that law probably wouldn't exist. Both of those things are relevant. Anything more you'd like to say about it?
Mm-hmm. One scene earlier in the book that sticks out to me is when she first meets Hiro, the second time she meets Hiro, she considers, like, staying in the car with him.
Uh-huh.
And then she's like, it probably would have been a pretty good time, but then, like, anyone who's nice enough to help me escape from jail is probably also nice enough to not have sex with me, or something, some thought process like that.
This first view...
Some kind of self-hating...
Not so much, just because she's young.
Okay.
The first few encounters between Lawrence and Drew made me think that they were getting, like, she said, partners, like, a lot, mm-hmm. and they were partners. None of that was with the hacking and the information, but I kind of, like, thought they were going to be together also.
Let me ask you one more question. Have you ever heard of the Helsinki syndrome?
Yes.
Yes? How many yes?
Heard
the name. How many no? Okay. Helsinki syndrome, who's heard it? Tell us about it.
It's just like a hostage kind of...
Hostage situation thing.
Yeah.
Most famous case in it, the most accurate parallel case it's that hostages tend to identify with and grow fond of their captors as a self-survival psychological mechanism. Patty Hearst event back in the 60s or 70s, I can't remember, right in there. So, you know, was put in a closet for days and was you know, terrorized, and eventually she became the lover of her terrorist guy and was doing crimes for him, and got off with a lighter sentence. I think she was found guilty, but was, you know, a lighter sentence because they used testimony about the then new diagnosis of Helsinki syndrome, which was that tendency. So is that relevant to YT being somebody, I think you maybe said already, knew that her life was dependent on him, she was vulnerable to him. Is that relevant to whether you she could even possibly have consensual sex? What I'm analyzing is there even, I mean, even though she clearly found it pleasurable, liked it, and said yes, does her age, does her terrorized position, her total vulnerability, the power difference, all those things eliminate the possibility of consent?
It doesn't necessarily eliminate it completely, but it can be debated.
Put it much more in doubt. Well, that's a good comment. Well,
go ahead.
No, it's your turn because you haven't spoken.
Are you defining consent as the legal term of consent? Or
kind of both and would be a good answer to my question.
Because it's two completely different things to give consent and then to have legal consent. So,
your opinion lie?
She could have. I mean, I don't know what the author was trying to make happen,
but.
I can't okay. know what he's trying to say. So.
Are you comparing this syndrome or whatever you're just talking about as a type of mind control? Kind of like you mess with the person's head so much that they believe that they're actually safer with you than somewhere else. So wouldn't that just be removing any free choice they have?
Correct. That's what the Helsinki syndrome is like. Mind control maybe overstates it, but it is saying that, you know, you make choices that if you were your own rational agent, you would not ordinarily do, like have sex with a guy that is holding a gun to your head and rob banks voluntarily for him. Okay. I think this was we're not going to give an answer to this. This was a discussion for your thought process. So let's stop there because we have a lot to go on to. All right with you? I want to do an assessment. Yes?
But then the second part of the question, which is that did we assess it being kind of a masculine, is revealing the masculinity of the violence.
Well,
that
is,
I want to go into that.
That's, you do or you don't?
Well, I was just curious where that left us on that one.
Dude, I think your assessment of whether it was rape and whether the state and whether that incredibly over the top orgasm she has instantly upon his entering her is, you know, a appropriate description of her reaction to that sexual event. That your assessment of those two questions would feed directly in to your position on my thesis. I made a contestable assertion, so it's a thesis, that the book, much as I love it, is a kind of masculinist, maybe slightly misogynistic action story, like too much science fiction, despite my love for science fiction. You know, you can love something and wish it wouldn't do that all the time. You know, and that my thinking about its sexual misogyny, I'm going to state my position in the strongest, most contestable way. Misogyny meaning, everybody know that word?
Yeah.
Hatred of women. or put it, degradation of women, that it's sexual misogyny makes me rethink how much I enjoy the violent battle scenes, because I say that kind of sexual misogyny is often culturally really twinned with masculine violence. You know, the go, 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 kill, kill, kill that powers online games and science fiction as a genre. And so this is a critique that I level at myself, because I love to be a really powerful, good fighting character. So, but I have these doubts about it. Yes, sir.
Would the fact that, I guess one of the major, like, violent scenes in the novel, actually is YT beating up a whole bunch of, like, government operatives? Like, would that contradict the misogyny thesis?
Question for the class, not for me.
I like it. I wasn't even thinking about that. I like it, though.
I just think it makes her, like, it's trying to make her a more attractive of a character, like, for the readers to follow, for the male readers, and so that just kind of builds her up. And
it's like the answer. I'm going to give two analogs to it. Because this argument, which is a terrific argument, has been used before. First time I remember it being used in a real popular cultural scenario was Aliens 2, where Sigourney Weaver just kicked butt. Do you remember that movie? How many have seen Aliens 2?
Was it Aliens or Alien 2?
That's it.
Aliens. I've seen it, yeah.
So let's see how many hands have. So, first one, she was your typical vulnerable female sci-fi character. Second one, she was... I know, I heard. Thank you for...
I got locked out of my room.
So, double.
Yeah, you locked the door. So I'm sorry. I'm close. My glasses are ready.
Dude, you look really good, though.
Thank you.
But Colin, you're here. That's the
I am here.
Okay.
I am so...
At any rate, the Aliens. And so, people actually... It came out in probably the late 70s. Probably in the late, maybe early 80s, people in the press, the critical press, made strong arguments about it being a feminist novel, a movie, because she appropriated masculine forms of violence to a female subject position, role.
What's that say about our society, that we define something as a feminist thing because we applied masculine things to a female?
Okay, but that's an answer to his question.
I don't think everybody heard Amir's assertion. Let me repeat that one more time. It was great.
I was saying how it's ridiculous that we define something as feminist when we apply masculine attributes to a female.
And the second time I remember it really entering the public debate, a little bit with Sarah Hamilton in Terminator 2. Notice the same thing. In one, she's the vulnerable. She's being chased, running. Terminator 2, she's jacked. I mean, she actually, there are all those. So I remember it there. And then there was a third more recent one that was in my mind. But
I remember there's a blonde girl in the Terminator.
That would be...
Any movie?
Right. Yeah.
Laura Croft.
Laura Croft. But, that's cartoonish.
Well, you see this a lot with the
protagonist who's,
remember the Starfleet captains? Suddenly, Captain Janeway came up, and it was a different story with Voyager. You see now a lot of feminine protagonists. Sarah Connor Chronicles is a television series right now, where she's at the center of it. Battlestar Galactica made the roguish character Starbuck into a female, she is a sexually voracious, butt whipping, ball-breaking woman in the sense of that story, and watch it if you haven't seen the latest Battlestar Galactica.
I can't. I'm still catching up. I can't start season 3, so I'm TiVoing it.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Angelina Jolie's.
Yeah. So you begin to see a kind of the culture industry, the media industry. I'm churning out movies with women in occupying the masculine subject position of violence. This word subject position is a kind of technical, philosophical term meaning the active position of hero subject that does these things. So that's a we can't spend much longer on this question here because we have a full class plan for today. I want to hand out these cards. This is going to be an anonymous assessment, so don't put your name on it. But I want you to rate your performance in class discussion. Give yourself a grade from A and F and explain why. And over the weekend, I am going to post mid-semester discussion grades on OAP so that you can see what I think your or what Matt and I think, because we will consult
plus
on
minus
this.
Just letters.
What?
Plus and minus is just letters.
Plus and minus would be great. Well, I mean, this is going
to
be anonymous.
I want to be consistent on this. I want you to do it from A to F and explain why.
Right. No, no plus minus.
Yeah, no plus minus. Just
no plus A F. Explain why. And let me say one other thing that I haven't said in this class. Before you start writing, let me have your attention. One of the things about freshman writing seminars, one of the kind of mandates when the Faculty Senate voted this course in, and so it's in the guidelines for what Matt and I have to do when teaching you, is to teach written and oral communication. Now, obviously, one way of teaching oral communication is having you do oral reports and that kind of stuff. But another mode is seminar situation, and it's, in my view, a much more realistic mode, or useful mode of oral communication, because in boardrooms, in discussions around, if you're going into the medical career, in you know, in all kinds of situations, you will be asked to respond rapidly to rapid-flowing, quick-moving discussion, real-time discussion, and it's a talent. It doesn't come automatically. If somebody can be shy, another person can be, you know, just not have his or her mind into the game because you're not an English major or something like that. But nonetheless, you still need to be able to find a way to contribute. So that's one of the purposes of this course. It's why we do all this. And so with that in mind, and you remember my grading. We do have actually posted criteria for what discussion grades constitute. So if you remember those, let them guide you.
And not putting our name on it, was it referring to?
Is anonymous.
Anonymous. How anonymous could they be if we're explaining why we're getting the grade we're getting?
Don't explain in detail. Just say, I wish I could talk. I don't know. If you're fearful that you're going to reveal yourself, just
if you think because you hate guys named Dan is why I'm getting a poor grade, then that may be I self-identify. But I think we'll be okay, Dan, for the way we're going to use this.
I mean, well, I say anonymous because I really don't. You know, this is not so that I don't want you to try and game the system by influencing me with or anything. I just want you to assess yourself. Do you not have a card, Lynn?
I don't need to write one.
How's that for participation grade?
Where is the discussion question?
On the syllabus.
But don't overthink it either.
Right.
Some people follow.
You guys want like a novel, right? That's how much writing.
Yes, it's going to be lucid, grammatically correct, and a compelling character at the center of it that guides me through the storyline.
Exactly.
Oh, compelling anonymous
character
at
the center of it, right?
Anonymous character.
Pardon me? Yeah, please do number two as well.
Where?
The flip side if you want to.
Where?
You're doing your card.
I know, I'm looking for...
You had 8 weeks to read the syllabus. Well, you could have explored it like you explored an online game.
TikTok, guys, TikTok. We're burning precious class time on this.
I'm sorry, I'm not participating.
Who gets them? Pass them back to me. You're starting bids. Let everyone know. Give them to Evan. Evan will make sure they get to me.
Right, Evan can be our... Evan is our anonymizer.
Thanks for that. It was the second question.
Yes. Do the second question.
You need your anonymous contribution.
Yes, my anonymous. Can I write on the back?
Absolutely.
Yeah, write it on the back so that we know which question you're answering.
I wrote 1 and 2.
That's the seven.
Okay. Do you remember question 2? Because I'm going to seize control of the...
Guys, keep misbehaving, and I'm going to have Lee break out his D20, and we're going to resolve grades out. That's right. Everybody roll.
Did we finish up? Pass it in? No. We wanted just one novel, not a series of novels.
A trilogy.
A trilogy.
Or to be if you got a novel from everyone who has to put it together.
Yeah, he's Auburn, I mean,
we did.
Tell him that shirt. I'm just like,
we should.
And then Arkansas will be Auburn.
But, you know, it's kind of shameful that you believe in your own football team as opposed to just knowing that there are
the first one starts the story, the second one finishes it, the third one, the fourth one. That'll be the next blog series.
Okay.
That's why we believe.
There's Cherubel. Uh-oh. Come on, Cherubel.
Where's Cherubel?
Right there. There's Cherubel.
That's great X.
Have you all ever been in... Oh, yeah, is that a great axe? Wait until you see this great axe. Take a look at this axe. Look at that. Look at the stats on Bone Spur there.
Can you make it full screen?
No. Jeez. I don't want to do that. Do you see that, Sunker? Can you see
that? I can't read it. 83
to 113, 29.7. Look at that, plus 30 vitality, might, will.
You're so excited about
this thing.
Okay, but the point is Cherubel's bio. And that's all the words that you could get on your bio. And I wrote mine in third person.
So did I.
Ancestor of the benevolent Cherubel brothers, whose improbable history will be recounted many centuries from now by the great writer Charles Dickens. Cherubel Nickleby aspires to be as light, kind-hearted as his legendary descendants. Known as Cheery to friends and strangers alike, he has grown portly in his old age from a love of fine wines and rich foods. Now that's how I visualize Cherubel Nickleby from Dickens' novel, Nicholas Nickleby. But you notice it's only about 3 sentences long. And that's not as what we want for your blog entry. So what I want you all to do, and Matt also wants you to do this, is to write your biography in either first or third person. But if you, but in either case, when you post it to the blog, it should have a sentence or two framing it, saying, this is the biography for my character in Lotro, because we have 16,000 readers out there for our blog who will be pretty puzzled. suddenly you're reading, I am so and so.
That's just been writing. Oh,
that's
it. Right, exactly. Exactly. And as I say, the blog version, as both we said last class, where both the blog version should be considerably longer than the miserable little 3 sentences they give us there. In Star Wars Galaxies, on the other hand, you could write about 2-page back.
And novellas have been written there.
And did you like your reaction? I'm saying that you did write a 2-page biography.
Yes, I did.
Indeed, indeed. But no, I don't say that to brag about the game. They ruined that game. I say it to...
Do you sense bitterness when you're not playing here, everybody?
I say it to indicate the level of textual narrative involvement that the game solicited from its participants. Okay, enough of that. I think Professor Hall is going to take over and start us on a conversation about the reading for Play Between Words, the Taylor thing. I apologize. The syllabus did have the wrong page numbers for the reading.
It's okay.
It's okay because we're reading that in a week and a half, and that's how I got my page numbers confused. But the reading that was up there was the correct one. So I hope you all did it, despite the confusion made by the page numbers.
You flip me back to the...
Oh, you want...
Yes,
you
I
want
do.
Your screen? Okay.
Alien was made, as Professor Clayton said, in 1979. That's what it came out.
What about Alien?
Alien was 79.
My roommate went out with Sigourney Weaver.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about legalities today. Two things I want to preface. Professor Clayton says very rightly that we have a mandate to help your written communication, which is why we do blogs and the peer-reviewed essays, but also your oral communication. Our goal today is to see that every single one of you in class today offer a verbal contribution to this discussion and series of questions. I'm going to tell you a little, I'm going to tee this conversation up a little bit about how we talk about play between worlds, what's half real and what's not, where does this boundary start in the game space and move into reality. I want to put something to you here. This is a recent case. Who knows what Blizzard is? Oh, a lot of people know Blizzard. Well, then you know this firm, Blizzard Entertainment, just won a $6 million lawsuit.
When was this?
It's October 2nd, 2008. Go ahead, Barry.
Is Blizzard still its own single entity?
I think it's isn't Viacom or somebody else own it?
It's with Activision and Vivendi Universal.
Vivendi's what I'm thinking about. But yeah, it's still a corporate entity.
They're still a Blizzard?
Yeah, it's a subsidiary corporation. And this is why Blizzard Entertainment is able to sue someone on its own behalf and win a $6 million judgment in October. Sam, jump in, dude.
I'm psyched for this one.
So,
me too. Final Fantasy had the bots also.
So this is part of this bot discussion, and we talked about play between worlds. We've got the real world space where we're living in that right now, and then we descend into the gameplay space. This company MDY has a technical utility called the Glider Bot. Has anybody ever heard of Glider? MMO Glider.
I've heard of bot.
I just read about this the other day, actually.
Well, tell us about it.
It basically will just help you level up and stuff, so you don't really have to do anything. Saves time.
It glides through the game and you come back.
Yeah.
Which is probably full of
items.
And we want to talk about the context of our narrative experience, but also in who owns the intellectual property. Blizzard has put land, labor, and capital and built a property up. They say, in their assertion, and this lawsuit is part of that assertion, Lynn, you cannot use the glider bot to assist you in your leveling or gold acquisition activities. So I want to just preface this gold farming. This allows you to automate tasks such as gold farming, killing things, leveling, just like Lynn said. So this is nothing new, but this is a major lawsuit that Blizzard really worked to assert their rights into this. So I'm going to put these three questions up, and I'm going to flip over to a website real quick and show you some comments on this, and I want you to speak to it. But while I'm flipping over to that website, I want you to think about these three questions here. Should you be able to sell real-world objects in the game space? Can I sell my car, Pepsi, real estate, whatever I want to sell in the game space?
What form? Saying,
don't overthink it. Just kind of let that question wander about in your mind, Evan.
The game space is defined by...
Okay, if you're logged in, LOTRO, World of Warcraft, any MMO that's a socially collected experience that has a narrative context like Lord of the Rings Online, and let's just say Lord of the Rings Online for our context here today. Should you be able to write and publish gameplay guides without the consent of the game owner? In other words, we can all get together as a group and write how to pwn LOTRO as a group and publish that and then take economic benefit from it. And should I be able to sell my account to Dan, for example? Should I be allowed to do that? Think about that for a minute. While we go back to this glider, this is the glider website. You can no longer download it. It's mmoglider.com if you'd like to look at it. Here is a conversation. This is the Slashdot Gaming. If you're ever interested in Slashdot, it's called News for Nerds. That would be me. And this guy makes an interesting comment here. And I want you to see if you can read that. Evan, can you read that for me while you're closer there?
Simpler problem of stopping World of Warcraft botting is easy. People bot in World of Warcraft because the grind to level a game, faction, and rep is long and boring. Change the game so that people aren't rewarded for sinking so much time into the game. Problem solved.
What's your reaction to that comment? First of all, did everybody understand and hear the comment as Evan read it?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your reaction, guys, to that comment?
Isn't that kind of reading the first thing?
Go ahead, guys.
I think that, like, changing the games that people don't have to put the time into it may not be the answer, but maybe making it more interesting to you know, get the reward might be a better solution than making it easier.
I think the actual time that the players invest in the game, it makes the reward so much more significant to them because they've spent so much time, they put all the hard work in, and then the bots, that just ruins everything for the players that don't want to spend so much time. It ruins the game for the veterans that actually did put the time in. They get the actual enjoyment from it.
Well, didn't we just talk about this, like, in regards to Star Wars Galaxies?
Yeah, a little bit. We started
a little bit. But like we said how they changed it to make it, you know, quick, easy to finish the game. And everyone who loved the game hates it now. So that answer, it like applies to a certain audience, but there's a lot of different people playing these games, so you can't just...
But I think what we're talking about is long and boring, not ease versus difficulty. I don't think we're talking about reducing the number of professions, for example. But
like long and boring might be an opinion. Like, some people might enjoy doing that.
It's a very generalized thing.
And he does say make it shorter, basically.
Let me give you a specific example from Lord of the Rings Online of a game mechanic to which this guy would be in concurrence. There's something in Lord of the Rings as a game mechanic which I feel in no way carries a narrative storyline forward. It's called a deed. Professor Clayton, would you like to tell us about a deed and how...
Mm. Reputation deeds. Just, you know, I was so proud of this game when it was invented because there were no grinds. And then about 8 months into the game, they introduced reputation deeds. Bingo. Grind.
And you'll find
kill 150 trolls to get to the next level that enables you to kill 250 trolls to get reputation point for, you know, whatever.
Troll Slayer, right?
Troll Slayer.
No, that's a title.
That's a result.
But then you get a skill in terms of strength or fortitude or whatever out of it. And so they actually, you know, they clearly were clearly thinking that there's some part of the market, you know, I guess.
It's a sales point.
Mm-hmm. That likes mindless grinding.
Jim, you were going to jump in on this?
Yeah, but I actually have something else to say.
Go ahead with it.
At the end of a deed, after you complete it, if you put your cursor over the, like, the red deed seal, like, it does actually give you, like, some text that, like, talks about what you did and, like, I don't know. I always enjoy reading those because some of them are pretty interesting. But what I was going to say earlier is, as far as the grind goes, I think there's a contrast between, like, the boring grind. Like, if you're going to spend time in a game and you have a choice between the grind or a game like LOTRO where, you know, you can level up and get nice stuff and stuff, like, from doing the quests. So, after you've gotten your stuff, you can look back and say, oh, I've been reading all this interesting, like, story stuff, or I've been, like, pressing this button, killing the same thing over and over again for the past, like, 5 hours. So.
I think this guy is overgeneralizing the gamers into people who bot only because they want to level up. Like, bots have several different uses. They could be used to level up a skill. And just by bringing it down to the leveling up, trying to make that shorter, it's narrowing the scope of what everyone's really looking at.
From a technical perspective, let me offer you this. Things that are amenable to automation are things that are task repeatable in a systematic way. That there are certain patterns on the screen, to Jim's point, you can press certain buttons and stand on a certain spot. And what Amir talked about, Troll Slayer, if you get yourself positioned in a certain area, there is a mechanic respawn timer that says in 5 minutes this troll will respawn. and you can automate by pressing 1, 2, or 3, however you have your key map set up, the selection of that target and the killing of that target in an automated rote way, which doesn't challenge you to do anything but go through that repetitive task. Those are things that are amenable to automation that MMO Glider permitted. I think it's his assertion here.
And also, like, the thing that really got me angry about the bots was, I mean, in Final Fantasy XI, just to make guild, there were a lot of like monsters you try and camp to get precious items,
right,
per se. And there would be people with automated characters who claimed before you could even see it. And it was just so annoying, because I'd sit there for hours and hours and try and outclaim computers and just didn't work.
What's really annoying is another Blizzard's game, Diablo 2. The bots don't do so much of that kind of stuff, but they come in and they're like advertising where you can buy game items with real world money. And it like fills up your screen with text, you can't see what's going on, you can't kick them out of the game, and they're just...
Yeah, that happens in WoW too, but you can like silence certain numbers of people or something like that.
Right.
Ignore. Ignore. Yeah. And then
Professor Clayton's going to demonstrate.
So I just wanted to, I just wanted to show you Cherubble. So there's Cherubble with his. Can you read any of these virtues? So there's his 8 justice. So he's a level 8 justice, and that's my virtue, and I got it by killing enormous numbers of things in
how
mindless
much morale
ways.
Is that?
What? So it gives you +8 in plus 0.8 in combat morale, 113 maximum morale. Oh, that's relevant. Now, here's the text that you were talking about, Jim. Here's the text. You are a servant of justice.
True.
You find that you are able to recover your morale more quickly in combat. Your morale is increased, and you're able to recover your morale more quickly outside of combat.
No, I was actually talking about, like, if you do Shift L and you go to, like, complete deeds.
Those deeds. Those are a different matter. Right.
Oh, you weren't talking about those?
Yeah, those are the type of deeds. Those are the deeds you're talking about. Well, let's not spend too much time on the mechanics of Lotra. The spirit of what we're talking about here is, this is something, for Professor Clayton to get Justice 8, I can tell you that he has killed thousands of in-game little critters, or NPCs, or whatnots. So this individual's assertion is that, since that can be automated, why shouldn't it? I mean, if you could just wake up one morning with Justice +8, not having to go through that labor, would you?
It's like work reward. You don't. I mean, there's. He was talking about Diablo 2. There's bots on Diablo 2 that like create this gap in the game of people who have like ridiculous level in things, and not. And it, I don't know. Like, I've never wanted to do to do that. I've been known
like,
that.
Like the bots that are advertising, you can go on and get a really good item for relatively cheap for what it's worth to some people, but then you don't have that same feeling of I have gone through this game and I found this item. This is mine.
I have an interesting parallel to that. There are servers on World of Warcraft where you can just start up with a high level character and there's shops all over the place where you can buy like the highest items or whatever for nothing. And then there are, but they're not any fun. Because, well, at least they're fun for let's go dig around on the server for like 20 minutes. But they're not fun in the long term, like WoW ostensibly is, because it's not engaging at all. You're not like connected. You don't really know how to do it very well. It's not like you went through and earned this character and these items, so you know how to use them really well.
And this is a separate parallel issue about can you buy your way into a leveling. They're related issues, they're not the same issue. Let me tell you what the courts have decided based upon Blizzard's assertion that a purchaser, and this is an ownership issue where I want to get you guys to talk about, is the courts are asserting here, based upon Blizzard and MDY Industries' conflict over MMO gliders, your account, you do not own your account according to the court. You are only licensing that account. And therefore, the terms of that licensing is it will be dictated by, in this case, Blizzard, but by also Turbine Entertainment. They provide the terms of service. This is the most recent legal ruling here. This is a Harvard Journal of Law and Technology contention. So let me bring us back here. Don't lose sight of what Dan's saying. This is an important part of this discussion. Everybody has to speak today. One rule before we leave. So there's some people who haven't had a chance to talk yet. I'm going to throw this first question out. Who owns credit? This is kind of related to Dan's question. Who owns the credits or gold in the account, in your perception? Not necessarily what the court's just said. Don't let that conform you. But who owns the credits and gold?
The player.
Yeah, theoretically, the player who earned it through camping whenever he camped or farming whenever he farmed sat there and actually earned it.
Because regardless of whoever owns the account, if they're asserting that they own it and they're licensing it to licensing it to you, you're the one who went out. They didn't give it to you. You went out and you found it or you stole it, whatever you did to get it, and then...
A good parallel can be if you compare an MMO to a real world and say... Yeah, well, I worked this many hours in my life and made $50,000. Who owns that money? The mint made it, but it's still your money to spend.
The people that are buying credits and gold online are not just buying the credits and gold. They're pretty much buying the work involved to get that credit and gold. They're paying the person to farm the gold for them. So really, they're just sort of like, it's not really buying it straight from the game or the game world is buying it from the player.
It's service.
Yeah.
Like you can if you want to save time and be efficient, you can say, well, I can make $7.15 an hour working for my dad and then use that money to go buy gold instead of spending triple the time in the game farming it myself.
Thanks, Kyle. I got a job for you. $7.15, that's a good long wage.
One thing that might kind of explain why the ownership is attributed to the company is because in the case of like in-game currency, if you're messing around with the currency system, which is probably the most important part of the in-game economy, which is one of the most, I guess, enjoyable aspects of the game and for some people, if you're messing around with that, they're not going to appreciate it because you're messing around with their product and they're not going to be able to sell this easily. And so, because like if you're creating all this inflation by like sitting there farming over and over again with your bot, then everybody else has a less enjoyable time because it's more difficult for them to like pay for stuff.
Yeah. Right, and you're also funding when you use, not when you use a bot, when you buy gold or gil online, you're funding the people that monopolize all these monsters.
I was gonna say not everyone is a bot out there who's farming. They have these things set up, like in like a hangar they had in China was just filled with rows of people doing 24-hour shifts, just grinding and getting gold, so that they could just flush it into. So the economy is not necessarily any worse off from people actually buying this gold because it's getting. These people are gonna grind it out, and it's gonna get traded for something somewhere.
Right, but coming into the you're creating because like the money is just being like created. I guess the reason there isn't a similar like problem. I mean, well, there could be a similar problem in like actual economy if the government like just decided to print up like billions of dollars.
So are you saying just to stop it, just to stop them from making so much money to limit the amount?
Well, I'm just saying that. The reason they're so kind of, I guess, wary of people messing around with the economy and stuff is because they can make big problems with it. And
let me run a scenario to your point, Jim. I've got a +100 Vorpal Sword of Death. All right, I'm selling it on the auction house. Starting auction is 1 gold. No fixed buyout price. It's 1 gold. Sam, who has worked hard and spent 55 hours accumulating 2 gold. Is ready to roll and he puts his bid down for 1 gold, 400 silver on my Vorpal Sword of Death. Now Kyle, on the other hand, who's incredibly wealthy and handsome and utilizes both those gifts in magnificent ways, says, I'm going to go to the gold farmer seller and from China in the hangar, and I'm going to buy 10 gold for $100, and I'm going to buy the Vorpal Sword of Death. I've spent no time in the game. It's my first day on the game. I've had a Chinese guy level me up across, I'm already level 50 in the course of a week, not touching it, and I bought I'm ready to buy the Vorpal Sword of Death.
So, I have to change our vocabulary here.
The first gold farm, automated gold farm, was in New Hampshire. And so I just don't want to sit, talk about China guys in terms of gold farmers, because the U.S. of A. invented this form of...
And the Chinese perfected
it. Yes. Right. That's all I'm saying. I just think, you know, you get into stereotypes so quickly. I just want to say that, you know, I mean, this is an international phenomenon.
Well, actually, most of the people that you would encounter in that would be not from China, because they have separate servers based on where you live in the world. They have.
I don't want to digress on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We've been politically corrected
one
for the moment. So let's. The question is the Vorpal Sword of Death at issue. You've got this person who's preempted. Sam has spent all his time and energy collecting that gold. Kyle has come in and just purchased the gold. Now Kyle puts his bid for 2 gold versus Sam's 1 gold, 400 for my Vorpal Sword of Death. What's the problem? Is there a problem?
The price is too low. What's the problem?
Sorry.
Okay.
The problem is it sort of destroys, at least it would for me, sort of the realism of the game world. I mean, a big part of it for me playing would be like, all right, I've worked really hard. Now I'm going to buy this. But, I mean, just the idea of people sort of getting money out of nowhere sort of, I mean, this is, in terms of game balance, it's nowhere near as major, as important an issue. But it still would just be annoying to me knowing that, like, there's no real reason in terms of the game's fiction for it to happen. It just kind of is. So beyond it not really being fair to the players who are working hard, it sort of destroys the strength, what's Jules' world, the continuity, as you say, or the coherence of the game world.
Yes, Chris.
Like, I should say, like buying goals from like money, like you pay for the goals. It's like a reality is involved in the virtual life, and like there's like binding, and like some people play MMOs just to like as like hero protagonists, like to avoid the real life, because like they have miserable lives. So like, you try to
bet, like, well, you know why we play now, I guess.
I mean, they try to become the best, but they can't really avoid it, because like, real life is in the virtual life.
And that's right. That was an important point made by Jewel in our reading too. That it's a similar version of what you're saying. So that's great. Good comment.
That's just a kind of along the lines of what, I mean, just Jim, Colin, and you, what you're all saying is kind of just that I think that they should have ownership of their game because...
They, the company?
The company, yes. Because there's another world to interfere with it. And I think that they need the control to keep it stable. If their game was the only world, obviously there'd be no need for them to control it. It'd be a functioning world. But when you have something, an outside force influencing it, there needs to be a measure of control to keep it stable.
That's, in line with that observation, how would you feel if I walked into a movie theater that you were enjoying, like your flick, and I held up a sign, buy hot dogs after the theater, $2.99, and I held it up on the screen like this. You've paid for this movie, you've paid the movie theater, but I walk in. I've paid for a ticket too, by the way, to be there in that theater. But I've decided that I'm going to stand at the front of the screen and hold up the sign, maybe next to the screen, not even in front of the screen, and say, please buy my hot dogs, $2.99 after the movie. Was that appropriate?
No, because it is ruining the experience. It's kind of a waste of your money.
It's not
kosher hot dogs, I don't care what
it's
you
It's not appropriate to the point that I would say anything to you or like tackle you or anything. I would just sit there and watch the movie as long as you weren't interrupting my experience.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about with the bots in V2.
Sometimes like bots don't piss you off necessarily, but there's definitely somebody that...
So your assertion is if they don't get in your way, not a problem.
With me.
With you.
But it is a problem for the world in general. Okay.
Should the movie theater owner have the right to remove said hot dog salesperson?
Yes. If he's holding up the...
If he's paid to be there.
But he's not,
to the side. I think the revision was to the side.
To the side.
Of the
side.
Oh, well, he could take away the sign.
He's paid to be there. He didn't even sign. He didn't even click OK on a EULA to be in the theater.
He didn't.
He did not click on a EULA to be in the theater.
But at the same time, if you're being a distraction to the rest of the people who are paying, like, you can't just, if you're sitting in a movie theater, just, like, stand up and not move. I mean, you're blocking people behind you. You're, like, interrupting their experience.
Perhaps they could give you a refund. Like, if it's the money issue that's the issue, then they could potentially be forced into giving a refund if you decided to go get a law enforcement officer. But, like, really, they can remove you.
Chris.
The owners cannot satisfy, like, a whole bunch of people for, like, one man who paid for a ticket, but he's trying to disturb other people, so...
He just wants to sell his hot dogs.
Like,
it's exactly.
Not efficient.
I'm not bothering anybody, Chris. I'm just
ad in the preview for the movie. Yeah, you pay for a ticket to see the movie, not to advertise.
Yeah.
I mean,
you
just
pay
to
advertise.
Why? Well, what's the problem with that? I should be able to advertise in movies. My right as an American.
You get the paper.
Not there,
yeah.
I was
gonna say.
How's that different from wearing a sign say "Vote McCain"? Not a sign, but a T-shirt.
I think we're looking at this wrong. This isn't a legal issue because legally there's nothing wrong with going in there and holding up a sign at all. It's more of an ethics issue or morals issue.
Or a community standards issue.
Is not community standards the same thing as the community's ethics?
Well,
to an extent.
Let's just say it is for this conversation.
Okay.
Nevertheless, the issue is not whether that he has the legal right to do it. It's whether you think, like, you think it's right to do it if it's ethically correct to the community or to himself or to you or to whoever's being affected by it. So you can't throw him out of the theater for any reason, but you may think it's wrong and he may not.
Well, going back to that, so are we talking about ourselves throwing him out of the theater or the movie company throwing him out of the theater?
Mm-hmm.
Which one? Ourselves?
That's an interesting question.
Great question, huh?
I was assuming that we were talking about the movie.
But it raises the whole idea of community standards, the social, you know, this idea of voting
and
people
vigilanteism. Has anybody? Let me just follow up on vigilanteism. Has anybody ever done things to harass a gold spammer?
To harass what?
To harass a gold spammer.
Yes, I have.
So that's, you know, that is the equivalent. That is the equivalent of taking the law into your own hands inside the movie theater.
In my case, I was with a group of people and a gigantic group of, we refer to them as RMT. They show up and they start, like, running their bots and, like, trying to level and stuff, like, right on top of us. So they pretty much kind of, like, forced us out of our, like, camp.
Yes.
So, what I did was I just kind of
run around, get everything.
We had some stuff that we were trying to kill, and we just kind of
aggroed everything.
Exited the area while the monsters were there, and afterwards, everything that we were trying to kill killed the people that
we trained like the entire zone to that area, and then like,
that's right.
You can't do that because
let's close this up. You get the last word on the top. What's your thought
on the movie?
The honest discussion we just had. We're gonna close out this because I want to move on to the next set of questions.
Well, at one point when you were talking about like holding up the sign, why not just buy one of the things in the previews?
One of the ads in the previews,
yeah.
Or in the 20 or whatever.
I could pay $7 for a ticket, like Amir says. So.
Yeah, but that does complicate it because the movie theater gets to sell. Of the chain gets to sell space in the previews, and so you know you really are infringing on their commercial property at that moment.
Okay, we have a lot to cover. Let's talk about a couple things, because we've got a lot of disparate topics. The EULA we started to touch on yesterday, and I want just to revisit the issue around this. When you look at the EULA, how many people have ever actually read this Lord of the Rings EULA? This is the EULA you've cited to. This is still going. I'm only halfway done. I'm still scrolling. Here we wait. But wait, there's more. But wait, it's done.
I got a question.
Everybody get that?
I got a question. Boss, I got a question.
Go for it, Big Daddy.
Does it say you may not teach a college class based on this course in that EULA?
Probably. That's why God invented the general counsel for us, so we don't have to worry about things like that.
I just, every time I see one of those things that everyone just clicks OK on, I ask, what if they just slip, like, and you will pay us $20 at, like, the bottom that no one will ever get to? Do you actually have to pay them that money, or is that just an assumed nobody does it thing?
There's a huge set of law issues around this.
Yeah.
But the first step in the EULA was, is this a license or is this a product? And clearly the courts are, by and large, coming down that these are licenses. I guarantee you, in the Chinese jurisprudence, it's a very different intellectual property regime. Same thing in India. There's different legal systems. But to Dan's point about this, people could slip a lot in here. How many have even paid attention to it? Anybody?
I'll be honest, when I was young and naive, I started to read one of these and then realized that my entire day was gone.
It's just not going to read the whole
year. So I was like, I would rather not spend 14 hours reading this.
Do you feel that this is really a contract between you and that firm?
No.
Who says yes?
It is, but I don't feel it. Like,
you think it's an enforceable, sustainable contract and legal, binding legal agreement between you and Turbine?
With the provision that you can be terminated at any time. Right.
Okay. It's not a law class. I'm just curious if you feel really bound by the terms. So you guys really feel bound by the terms of the EULA?
I agree. I just want to play the game. I'm not even thinking about what it says.
So Evan's point, he just wants to play the game. Does he click through? Now, Lynn will read every word. Lee will read all the words in the EULA, but... Yeah. So...
It's almost like a non-binding contract. You're going to click it. You're not going to abide by it. But if the opportunity ever comes up where it's relevant, you're going to lose. You're going to lose that argument there because it's technically there.
Are you going to lose? Do you mind if I digress? Contract of adhesion. An agreement prepared by one side which is either accepted or rejected by the other side. There is no bargaining. A contract that heavily restricts one party while leaving the other free as some standard print form printed contract. You will win in a court of law if it's ruled a contract of adhesion. Because contracts of adhesion are not binding. Does that change your analysis?
Even if you accept it?
Even if you accept it, they're not binding.
So then what's the purpose of it?
The purpose of it is to intimidate you into not suing. For example, in the medical hospital context, you do all this stuff and it says in there, and I might leave my scalpel in your stomach and it kills you.
And
you will not sue me. And you sign that. And a lot of people are intimidated into not signing. But if you sued them, you'd win like that. So it's a contract of adhesion is a thing that lawyers can use to say, no, there was no bargain. There was no exchange for that. So
if the contract for one of these MMOs say that you will not redistribute this product to anyone else, and it was just a